You're listening to the Archaeology Podcast Network.
You're listening to the Rock Art Podcast. Join us every week for fascinating tales of rock art, adventure, and archaeology. Find our contact info in the show notes and send us your suggestions.
Hello out there in podcast land. This is your host, Dr. Alan Garfinkel, for episode 150 on the Archaeology Podcast Network. And we're blessed and honored to have Dr. Gerard O'Regan, who's going to be talking about his heritage and the rock art of the Maori out of New Zealand. Doctor, are you with us?
Kia ora, I am. Oh, tēnā rā koutou. O tuatahi, e mihi kia koutou, e ngā mana, e ngā reo, e whakarongo mai nei. I roki i tēnei kaupapa hirahira o tātou. That's just a little acknowledgement in our Māori language to those of you listening and lending your support and honour your mana to our important rock art heritage here in Aotearoa, New Zealand.
Dr. O'Regan, I think it's appropriate to open us with a blessing or a prayer in your native language, which is being someone who is that respects religious persuasions and indigenous theology. I would be honored to if you would do that for us.
Oh, kia ora, I'd be happy to do that. Whakataka tohu ki tūru, whakataka tohu ki te toka kia mai, kina kina ki uta kia mā taratara ki tai. E hi aki ana te atakura, he tio, he hoka, he hauhu, ti hei, Māori ora. That little or incantation is calling for things to be calm and settled at sea, things to be calm and settled inland. We draw forth the red dawn. It is a piercing frost, a strong frost, and from that there is a new wind. Te hei Māori, the breath of life. And kia ora is a Māori greeting we have, which literally means be living.
That's remarkable and wonderful. What a blessing to have someone of your background to meet us on this digital international podcast. I'm in the great place of Bakersfield, California. Can you imagine, Gerard? and we're talking over the miles and smiles together about your background and Maori heritage and the great influence that it's had on you and the nature of your efforts in rock art. The way I usually open this up, if you've listened to any of my podcasts, is I ask for a thumbnail sketch, a word picture of kind of your background and what brought you into the anthropology, archaeology, study of rock art and indigenous culture. Now with you, that's probably a silly question, but I'll let you tell the tale if you wish.
Oh, for sure. Well, thank you for that. Yeah, I tripped over a job at the National Museum in Wellington when I was about 18. So that was back in the mid-1980s. And I was very fortunate to work as a technician in the ethnology department. And from there, I got interested in our archaeology, in our taonga, our treasures that are kept in the museums. And that gave me the opportunity to really engage in our Māori heritage. Well, that was the start of my engagement in Māori heritage in a professional way. But I'd grown up in Wellington. So if you think of New Zealand, we've got the two main islands, the North Island and the South Island. Wellington is our capital city at the bottom of the North Island. So it's kind of in the centre of the country. But my tribal roots are from Ngaitahu, which is in the South Island. My tribe covers most of the South Island, and my main marae are our cultural centres. And my main marae that I relate to or have genealogical connection to, one is Moiraki, which is in North Otago, about two-thirds of the way down the South Island on the east coast. And the other one is Bluff, which is right at the very bottom of the South Island. And so our Māori name for that is Awarua, or Bluff Harbour. And my tribal connection has always been active through my father, who led our tribal land claim for most of the 1980s, 1990s into the 2000s. My tribe, covering most of the South Island, has an interesting thing in that it's got most of the Māori rock art is found in the eastern coast of the South Island or the eastern seaboard. And one of the marae or cultural centres that is particularly related to our rock art is my marae at Moiraki. So while I was working in Wellington and having grown up in Wellington, it wasn't, of course, in the days before the internet. And so a lot of our tribal members used to travel through Wellington. So we always had cousins coming through and we were always at the same time visiting parts of the South Island ourselves, especially with my father and while he was involved in the land claim histories. So one of the things with that is I had this particular interest in our tribal heritage generally, but it was really that opportunity as a young fella at the National Museum where I got to think about it and become engaged in it professionally. So at that time, there was an exhibition that came through called Ngā Tuhituhi o Nehera, which is a Māori phrase meaning the writings or the inscriptions of yesterday. And that was a photographic, mostly a photographic exhibition. There were a few pieces of rock art that had been cut out, but it talked about our southern Māori rock art. It was a travelling exhibition that toured the country, and it was at the National Museum when I was first there. I left the National Museum and went down to Otago University where I did my undergrad in archaeology and importantly with our tribe's leading archaeologist there who later became a professor, Professor Ethel Anderson, who's one of our preeminent Pacific archaeologists and certainly a big figure in our tribal scholastic networks. And Ethel, at the time, had initiated a project with another chap called Brian Ellingham, a local archaeologist, a local field archaeologist, and they were revisiting and reviewing the rock art of our tribe in the South Island. And part of that was going out and checking what had survived in the field, what was still there, and resurveying. And that was my initial opening to our rock art heritage.
Wonderful. How many Māori are there?
I think is currently at about something like over 4 million people in Aotearoa New Zealand, and the Māori population is about 15%, I think.
Okay.
I'll have to check those. Our tribe.
Yeah, those are very significant numbers. I guess the reason I asked that is it's a very different situation here in the States in terms of the number of indigenous people that we have versus the non-indigenous population. And what is the antiquity of the Māori presence in New Zealand, the sort of the cultural periods or the in-migration? Do we know, or is that something that is still conjectural?
Yeah. The Māori people of Aotearoa New Zealand arrived here about 700 years BP.
That's what I see in the literature, and in terms of when I've read the articles that you had penned and saw a little bit about your research. Yeah. Was there an earlier presence of non-Māori people there or no?
No, there isn't. It's one of those interesting things that there are different stories that have emerged in the past of a pre-Māori people.
Okay.
And that has come from both early archaeologists and subsequently from archaeologists and ethnologists, museum workers. And then it subsequently also has been picked up by what we might call alternative theorists. And one of the things with the rock art, of course, is as in other places around the world, rock art does become a bit of a magnet to alternative theorists. But there's no evidence whatsoever of anybody in New Zealand before the Polynesians who arrived here and became our ancestors of Māori today.
And that is rather remarkable, don't you think?
It is in some ways and not in others. If we look at the peopling of the Pacific, we see Polynesians sort of emerged and become Polynesians in the Tonga Samoa area.
Yeah.
And from there, you get the expansion. And that was about, you know, 3,000 BP.
Right.
You then get the expansion out into the central east Polynesian area of Tahiti, the Marquesas, and so on, and the Northern Cook Islands. And one of the things that happened, and the recent archaeological evidence is showing us, that happened relatively late. It was only a little over 1,000 years ago that we see the peopling of East Polynesia, previously uninhabited islands. And then from that central Polynesian, East Polynesian area around the Society Islands, so thinking Tahiti, Makai, we then, within only 1,000 years, less than 1,000 years, see a very rapid push up to Hawaii, out to Nui, Easter Island, and then lastly down here to Aotearoa, New Zealand. And so when we look at Māori, one of the things we have to appreciate is we are only several hundred years separated, if you like, from our cousins, our relations in Tahiti, Hawaii, and Rapa Nui. And so New Zealand, being a landmass that was settled late, is one of the interesting things with that is Polynesia has often been thought of as a bit of a, what would we say, a bit of an interesting case study for human expansion and development into different landscapes.
Sure. Yeah. Let's wait there, and we'll pick up the story on the next segment. See you in the flip-flop, gang. Welcome back, gang. This is segment two of your 150th episode of the Rock Art Podcast on the Archaeology Podcast Network. This is Dr. Alan Garfinkel, and our guest scholar is Dr. Gerard O'Regan, who hails from the ethnicity of being a Maori himself and has a doctorate from the university in New Zealand. And we're talking about his ancestry and the populating of New Zealand, and in turns sort of leading him into the discussion of about the heritage values that are present and how he began his research there in New Zealand. So Gerard, let's pick up the story a little bit and maybe share your case study about how you began dealing with heritage issues with the Maori and how that developed for you, please.
Yeah, I mentioned about how I first got involved at an undergraduate level with Professor Ethel Anderson. Ethel and Brian Allenham, the local archaeologist, initiated this survey of the rock art in the South Island to better understand what our records were, because they were recognised as being a little bit haphazard. After I had done my undergraduate studies, I returned to the National Museum, where I was one of the collection managers for the Taonga Māori, the Māori treasures there. And it was from that background I then ended up with coming back south to Dunedin, where I worked with our local museums. So I was based here at Tuhura Otago Museum, but I went around all the little museums in the Lower South Island community museums, helping them out. And that's where I got a firm understanding of so much of our heritage in New Zealand is actually looked after and preserved by people working voluntary in their leisure time through those little heritage organisations and communities. And that was also very true of our Māori heritage, which was not, there were very few Māori professionally engaged in our museums, in our archaeological work at that time. Ethel was something of an exception, and especially being a senior scholar engaged professionally in Māori heritage. And Ethel at that point had the great opportunity to go to the Australian National University in Canberra, Australia, and he'd started this rock art project for our tribe, and it needed somebody to pick up the reins and help manage it. And so I found myself somewhat in the deep end, managing this initiative to try to record all of the rock art we had within our tribal area, which again covers most of the South Island. Absolutely important to that was Brian Allenham, whose enthusiasm and commitment to just be in the field working with landowners, given that so much of our rock art in the South Island is on private land, and you know, doing the hard miles, just checking back through the old historic records and checking that how those work or not in the field and surveying areas that hadn't been surveyed. So out of that, we ended up with a 300% increase on a pilot study in North Otago. We ended up with a 300% increase in the number of rock art sites being recorded. And so
they're fabulous.
Oh, it was huge. And that's not including, if you like, the number of other rock art found in previously recorded sites, rock art that had previously been unrecognised. And so with that, when we reported that to an annual hui, an annual meeting of our tribe, there was unanimous support that our tribe should initiate a major project to fully record the rock art as best we can and preserve that heritage before it fades. Sure. And so that's where we started our tribal initiative. I think one of the interesting things that came out of that was we, at the same time, had our tribal land claim underway, and that came to a settlement with the New Zealand Crown, the New Zealand government. And when we had that settlement, that gave us resources as a tribe to be able to establish our infrastructure and systems and our own organisations. So with that, one of the things we set up was a heritage unit, and I became the manager of that heritage unit, and Brian was the archaeologist, and we had several other archaeology people join us, including a young archaeologist called Amanda Simon. And from there, we were able to take our rock art endeavours to another degree. We had another young chap called Moriri McGlinchey, also from Waimarae in North Otago, who joined up as a bit of a protege under Brian's direction. And with that, we started to, as a tribe, we started to be able to carve out our space in terms of the rock art heritage, where previously the key advocates or the key voices in it had been very much the archaeological fraternity, the Historic Places Trust of New Zealand, and those kinds of interests that are, if you like, of a more kind of historic and anthropological interest. With doing our own archaeology on our rock art, our tribe started to carve out our space.
And your particular perspective, your voice as a tribe and what you believed or recognized about these heritage resources, am I correct?
Absolutely. And so one of the things that unfolded from that was we actually set up our own tribal rock art trust. And and that then became, if you like, and it still remains, the principal voice on rock art in New Zealand today. One of the things that our trust then looked to do was build a rock art visitor centre. We had this idea of a rock art visitor centre, a bit of a museum, if you like, where we would bring back different pieces of the rock art that had been sometimes chopped out of some sites and would have those returned home to us and would tell the rock art story with our tribal voice from our rock art centre. And that is based in Timaru. It's still going. It opened in 2010, I think. It's based in South Canterbury, which is about 2 hours south of the main centre in the South Island, which is Christchurch City.
Can you give our listeners a glimpse of what the Maori believe and think and feel regarding rock art? Just a glance, if you would.
Yeah.
What does it mean to them?
The are the great questions of Maori rock art, you know, sort of, who made it, how old is it, and what does it mean?
And what I mean by that is it's not necessarily its function or its artisans, but its significance. How's that?
Yeah. All of those three questions lead to how we feel about our rock art today.
Excellent.
So the Maori word for rock art that we have traditionally recorded in our histories is ana whakaero. And ana means cave, and whakaero is adorned. the word for corridor is quite often used for carving today, but it actually has a broader usage of kind of adorned. So if you think of the adorned cave, the cave that has been adorned with these moat patterns, the thing that we most look at is the rock art. Well, we don't normally know who did it in terms of the individual people who might have left the markings. What we do know is they were our collective ancestors. And so at a collective level, we view those as our ancestral heritage. And we call them taonga. And taonga means treasure. So rather than being a carving or an artifact or something like that, we refer to those things as taonga. And,
it's a treasure.
It's a treasure, but importantly in that, what it also means is the key issue is the treasuring. And so rather than the treasure is the thing, it's actually the process of treasuring that is important. And that leads us to what we call kaitiaki. A kaitiaki is a caretaker, a guardian, but it is somebody who has responsibility for the care of those treasures. And so When we look at our cultural heritage in these ways, it's about the connection to our ancestors on one level, but it's also about the sense of obligation we have to our ancestors and these manifestations that they've left.
So to recognize them and treasure them, the kinship connection, the ancestral connection, the genealogical connection are all primary, are they not?
They absolutely are. And one of the things about it is when we look at rock art, it is those connections are not only through the motif and the design and how they might inform our arts today, but it's also those connections to place. And that is the thing we really celebrate is our rock art is, it is fixed in the landscape, it's fixed in place, as all rock art research will tell us. Place is, or how it is put in place, is actually a very large part of both meaning and what it would have meant to our people in the past, but also what it means to us today.
Nice. Let's stop it there, and we'll come back for a final third segment to do some more reflecting and insightful consideration of the rock art record. See you in the flip-flop, gang. Welcome back to your Rock Art Podcast with Dr. Gerard O'Regan, talking about the Maori cultural heritage, rock art of New Zealand. And Gerard's going to talk about some of the word pictures and the nature and character of this heritage. Gerard, please.
So Maori rock art shares a lot of commonality with other Polynesian rock art, especially given that it's, we're so closely related both in, at least in time, with other East Polynesian islands, so thinking about Hawaii, Tahiti, Rapa Nui. And that has informed some of how our rock art in New Zealand has been interpreted and viewed in the past, but it's also, we also have some particular unique aspects to it. So we, across New Zealand, our rock art is found from the top of the North Island all the way down to pretty much halfway down the South Island, not so much at the bottom of the North Island, but all through the South Island, on the eastern coast, and in the very south we have rock art occurring. And there's another people called Moriori who live in the Chatham Islands, which is about, I think it's about 800 kilometres to the east of the South Island. They're very closely related with Māori. They also have rock art over there on all the Chatham Islands. There's been some discussion in the past about rock art in the South Island being different from rock art in the North Island. So if I describe our South Island rock art first, it is mostly pictographs, mostly paintings, drawings. We do have a recipe that survived from the past and was recorded in the ethnohistories, and it talks about a being gathered from a fire, so not charcoal, but soot being gathered from a fire, mixed in with the juice of some berries, the gums of a tree called the tarata, which is a very gummy, has a very resiny gum, and also mixed in with bird oil or fats from a bird to make a paint. And this the term that was applied to that was, it will be an ink that will stand forever. So when we look at our paintings down here, they were very deliberate in the sense of there were different components brought to make the paint that was applied as pigments. So most of our pictographs down here are black, but we also have quite a few in the South Island. Sorry, I say here because I'm sitting in the South Island. Most of them are black, but we do have quite a lot of red paintings as well. And some of them are very rarely do, but some of them are bichrome or using red and black simultaneously.
What is the subject matter? So what is being depicted?
Yeah, so the most common subject matter are humans. We call them tiki figures. Tiki is a term for a human form. The tiki mostly in what we call a haka stance, where it's kind of splayed arm, a frontal depiction with splayed arms, splayed legs. The haka is a dance, an act of dance in Māori culture. And so we say that these tiki are in that haka stance. That's the majority, but then we also do find some in like a profile, sideways view of a person in a what we might think of as a crouched position.
Is the haka stance with the arms and hands aloft towards the sky?
Yeah, the arms.
Yes.
Raised,
yes.
The legs,
yes. Yeah. That is universally identified as what's called an adorant posture. A-D-O-R-A-N-T. Yes. Yes. Connecting from the terrestrial to the celestial sphere.
Right. Oh, couple. Yeah. Well, the other thing we have a lot of down here in the South Island is a lot of bird representations and or different animal representations. Bird, dog. So the dog was brought here by Māori. It was introduced along with, you know, the rat, the Polynesian rat. They were introduced by Māori people into New Zealand, whereas about 700 years ago. But the bird motifs are very interesting in that there are a couple of examples where there are very clear depictions of the moa, which was a giant bird, a bit like an ostrich or an emu. It was found throughout New Zealand. The moa went extinct very soon after Māori arrived. All people, our ancestors, hunted them. They also, with the landscape change, with the burning of forests and landscape change, the moa habitat was lost. They were probably very slow breeders, and so with egg predation, we see the demise of the moa very quickly, probably within the first 200 years of Māori migration in New Zealand. So these depictions of the moa are clearly depictions of an extinct species. One of the other birds that is represented or thought to be represented is what we call the harst eagle. There's been an argument that some of the pictures are naturalistic depictions of this giant eagle, which used to predate on the moa. The harst eagle was about half as time as big again as the golden eagle, and it was the biggest living eagle ever to have been anywhere in the world. Our ancestors, we know archaeologically, had an experience of the harst eagle. Whether or not these are depicted in the rock art, it becomes another question, because almost the same breath, we have archaeologists and anthropologists calling some of those eagle depictions birdmen. And the birdmen motif that is found in Hawaii, it's found in Rapa Nui. There's a particular ritual about the birdman in Rapa Nui, Easter Island. And there are bird people in our traditions. A famous character was a bird woman who took a prisoner up in the central North Island, and there are landmarks that talk to that tradition of this bird woman.
What's your thought about that, on that issue?
Yeah, myself and a cousin of mine, Tumare To, and another colleague, Kurima Burns, we pulled together all of the information we could, because then what we did is looked at the third element that comes into the discussion, which is the Powakai. And the Powakai is another character in our traditions in the Lower South Island, and it is a monstrous man-eating bird. So it was this idea that an archaeologist or a scholar pulled together in, from the 1950s when they started looking at the eagle bones and saying, well, are these really the, perhaps these are evidence of the monstrous bird, the Powakai of Māori tradition. Mm-hmm. So when we look at these rock art motifs, we've got a set of motifs that on one hand are called Powakai, this giant monstrous bird that used to predate on people. On the other hand, it's called a birdman, a sort of a half-bird, half-man character. And on the other hand, it's a naturalistic depiction of the harst eagle. And when, what we did in this paper that we were writing was we came to the conclusion that there is all of those ideas actually stand independently, and they are people kind of joining the dots. In joining the dots, they're kind of making quite bold lines joining the dots, whereas those lines should perhaps be more dotted lines with question marks on them. The idea that Powakai is the Māori term for the harst eagle, we don't consider it to be robust, and we don't consider it to be a robust interpretation that these images are naturalistic depictions of the harst eagle, in the way that we are quite confident that the pictures of the moa, the big emu, ostrich-like bird, are
accurate,
eyewitness accounts.
What would you like to sign off to our listeners? What's the takeaway from our discussion today, and what do you think they should know about yourself and the heritage of the Maori and the rock art?
Well, I've talked mostly about our South Island rock art. We have numerous tribes in the North Island that also have rock art, and different things ranging from spirals carved on rocks on the beachfronts through to important depictions of ancestral canoes painted and carved into caves. We have some rock art that is, you know, metres long, you know, where you actually have to move the length of the rock shelter to be able to appreciate the totality of the imagery above, and that includes one called a Taniwha motif, which is a Taniwha being a big serpent character. But when we look at all of those things, the diversity of rock art, what we do see is a commonality between rock art right across New Zealand, from the North Island to the South Island. We see different proportions of different motifs in different areas, but there is a commonality between our rock art here in, across New Zealand, but also a commonality with the rock art that we find in with our Polynesian cousins. And importantly, like with our Polynesian cousins, or tangata moana, people of the ocean, we actually celebrate the fact that we are now at a time where it is our own communities that are able to drive the care and protection and the research and the revisiting and the celebration of both the rock art motifs in terms of our art, but also the places where they're found.
What a blessing. Thank you, Doctor. Wonderful and remarkable conversation. I am so blessed that you took the time to meet with us and chat.
Thank you very much indeed for your interest and in providing this opportunity to share a little bit about where we are in Aotearoa New Zealand with our rock art heritage, and especially to all of the listeners who are so excited about the wonderful rock art stories around the world that you continue to share. Kia ora.
Thank you. See you in the flip-flop, gang. 150.
Thanks for listening to the Rock Art Podcast with Dr. Alan Garfinkel and Chris Webster. Find show notes and contact information at www.arcpodnet.com/rockart. Thanks for listening, and thanks for sharing this podcast with your family and friends. The Archaeology Podcast Network is 10 years old this year. Our executive producer is Ashley Airy. Our social media coordinator is Matilda Siebrecht. And our chief editor is Rachel Roden. The Archaeology Podcast Network was co-founded by Chris Webster and Tristan Boyle in 2014 and is part of Cultura Media and DigTech LLC.
This has been a presentation of the Archaeology Podcast Network. Visit us on the web for show notes and other podcasts at www.archpodnet.com. Contact us at chris@archaeologypodcastnetwork.com.